That clock is spot on.
Couple of, you got two guys.
Oh, we got 2 minutes according to AT&T.
I think they all fall under the same.
I thought that we had that problem. Last year.
I don't know if that's in your job description.
You don't want her falling.
Just tell them no.
Hey, how about them Packers?
Great. They have, keep having silly penalties like that, they won't last the playoffs.
How about the Bears?
You know what, you want to dig, they were 3-10, dig away.
So the question was, are they going to trade their third round pick for Tony Romo?
They probably will make it so that we lose another decade worth of football.
Oh, that's good.
Tony Romo's terrible.
Well, he's also older than dirt.
Oh, he's younger in color.
Hi, Albert, am I at the right meeting?
Yep.
Okay. Guys, start to worry.
We'll check the agenda for the county board, we ought to be there till what, Thursday?
There's what, 37 items?
Hey, we got to get all those people, get all those committees filled.
What's that?
Total appointments. And that zoning, you know, boom, boom, boom. Nothing controversial.
That should go pretty fast.
Supervisor Dodge, I'm not going to be at the 7:30, you'll vouch for me for LEPC, right?
Vouch for you for what?
LEPC.
Oh, that's what I was supposed to report on.
You know, I went to a committee meeting I was going to report on. What was it?
What's LEPC?
I haven't looked my minutes.
The local emergency planning.
Oh, are you up for that?
Yeah, reappointment.
She's a great woman.
Yeah, I'll put it on good word if you want. All right.
Thank you for reminding me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is now officially 6:00, according to AT&T. And we'll call a meeting to order, a roll call.
Michael Gable?
Here.
Leah Blau?
Not yet.
Marty Ruslow?
Here.
Andy Burke?
Present.
John Poole?
Here.
David Holman?
Not yet.
Rick Dodge?
Here.
Tyler McCarthy? Anna Sorensen?
Here.
Elder Nero?
Yeah, I thought she was.
She was.
In Croatia, yeah.
Yeah.
Citizen comments?
Always like this part, you're getting a vote passed.
Seeing no citizen comments, approval of the December 6th, 2016 minutes?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Presentation of the Baby Cafe Program by Laura Peters.
Good evening. Cindy Johnson here from the Division of Health, and I'd like to introduce Lori Peters. She's our team leader for the Comprehensive Home Visitation Program, and it's our Parents as Teachers is the evidence-based program. She's going to speak to you on the Baby Cafe, one of the initiatives that she started through our grant.
So I've worked for many years in OB. I've seen happenings the last 7 years of my career there, and then was brought on to the health department as a nursing team leader. And one of my interests had been breastfeeding, and shortly after I started, I was asked to apply for a grant for breastfeeding. And it was through NAJO, which I don't know if I've got this all spelled out, but it's the National Organization for Health Departments. The specific statements of the grant were that we were going to use it to implement a breastfeeding promotion program within our home visitation program, with a slant of being a benefit to the African American and underserved community, but we could apply the measures to all of our clients, which was a good thing. So I did create a handout on what the final outcome of our grant was. It's the TAN one. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on that. But we started with pretty low initiation rates, especially the African American women. And those that did start didn't last but a few days. And by the end of the grant, we had a much higher rate of breastfeeding initiation and breastfeeding exclusivity. So We did have success with the things that we had done in this program. Now, part of this program was opening something called Baby Cafe, and that's what I really want to talk about tonight. I'm sitting in a room full of a lot of men and a couple of women, and many of you probably are kind of past your, having little kids around time. You're not, okay. And you might wonder, well, why does breastfeeding matter? Breastfeeding is important. We do know that it's the best nutrition for babies. If mom can manage to breastfeed, the baby successfully navigates it, it's the best thing we can get. The breast milk is made specifically for that baby based on the baby's age. It does change as the baby gets older. Whatever mom and baby are exposed to, there's antibodies that are created in the breast milk. So if a mom and baby can navigate for breastfeeding, it really is a huge benefit. American Academy of Pediatrics does recommend exclusive breastfeeding for the first 6 months of life, and then continue breastfeeding until the baby is a year, and then as long as both mom and baby are still receiving the name after that. So there is support from pediatricians for breastfeeding. So it's supposed to be a natural thing. Moms are just supposed to be able to do it. What's the big deal? Why do we need these kinds of things to make this happen? Breastfeeding support many years ago, 100 years ago, 150 years ago, came from your mother, your grandmother, your aunties, your friends, anybody that lived in your community. They all breastfed. So if you had a baby, they all came and helped. And you figured it out. You saw your aunties and your sisters and your mother breastfeed. So it wasn't a big deal when you began to have your own children. Now it's unusual for a mom who's had her first baby to actually see someone breastfeed to bring the baby. So her learning curve is huge when she has that first baby. She's got to figure out what to do, how to do it, when to do it. She's exhausted. Maybe there's things going on in the hospital that have kind of impeded the mom and baby being able to navigate it. Maybe there's some other complications that couldn't be helped. And so we kind of set these moms up for sometimes it's a really torturous course if we don't provide them support. And that's where Baby Cafe came in. When I was looking for programs to implement for the grant, I wanted to model something that we had done at the hospital when I was doing my patient work there that we actually made it successful. Support was facilitated by my teaching consultant that allowed the moms to drop in when they wanted to, we did it weekly. And many of these moms, once they started, they kept coming until they had a wean or they had to go back to work. And those that had to go back to work oftentimes would call me, and I get calls all the time until babies were well over a year old. All kinds of questions. Stuff that wasn't terribly complicated, but they couldn't find a person with an answer. So when I was in health department again, looking for ways to implement this grant, that was what I wanted to do. And so Baby Cafe is a nationwide program. It started in Europe, brought it over to the United States, and there are several grants throughout the United States. And basically what it is just a place where moms can go. You have to pull a minimum of one session a week. You cannot charge for the information. You have to have a mix of people there as far as who supports the mom. So somebody that has some lactation credentials, which I do, and another nurse does. We partnered with WIC, and so they also have several people that have credentials for lactation there as well. Some of the dietitians are credentialed. And then there's also a peer support person that we have as well. And the idea is these moms come, they might have a serious problem, they might have a problem that isn't so serious, maybe it's just like having trouble transitioning this really needy baby. They don't really know how breastfeeding is supposed to go, so they think there's a problem, but in fact it's just a normal baby, and she just needs somebody to hold her a little bit. And oftentimes that's the biggest amount of support that we get. So we did open Baby Cafe in, I believe it was 2015 in the spring, in April, and there was crickets chirping in the room for quite many weeks, and we would maybe, Wick would drag somebody up, we'd do it on the second floor of Wick, Wick would drag somebody up and here talk to this lady. But for the most part, those first several weeks, there wasn't any opportunities. But we marketed to the hospitals, to our home visiting clients, Wick knew about us. We talked to Levichu, we talked to pediatricians, and pretty soon we started getting moms. We've got pretty steady attendance now. We give between 4 to 6 moms a week. Unfortunately, most of our moms end up going back to work really early, which is hard. It makes it tougher. So they come until they have to go back to work, and we help them transition over to that and give them advice for that. We are looking at possibly holding a meeting session in the future because they've been asking for that. Some of our success stories, you know, moms, they know we're there. If they have a problem, even once they stop coming because they've gone back to work, they pick up the phone and call. I got one mom whose baby just turned a year, and she's really been cute. It's not exactly the ones at Baby Cafe, but she had my number. And we've got some phones, some visitors do. And so I will periodically get these texts, you know, cute picture of baby, and oh, by the way, you know, we started solid, and this is what's happening. Is that normal? Yes, that's normal. I got Christmas pictures and a question about sleeping through the night, and then I got New Year's pictures and a question about sleeping through the night over here. So, you know, it's just that kind of relationship that we built with these moms. They know there's somebody out there that can help support and answer those questions. And, you know, we don't know that type of breastfeeding. If they only want to do it 6 weeks, great. Support you through that until you stop. Go for a year or more, I'll help you with that too. So it's been a worthwhile program. Was there anything in that one? Yes.
So do you only focus on the breastfeeding itself, or as an option, pumping also?
We talk about that too. And we pumping's a lot of work, but sometimes moms get to that point either because they made a choice that's just best for them and their family, or happenstance, and that's where they end up. So absolutely, mom is exclusively pumping, and that's what she is committed to doing. Yes, we support mom with that too. It's a lot of work. And then anybody that does even a week ahead.
Yeah, I know when our kids were young, you know, my wife went to the La Leche League. You know, mm-hmm. How come we just don't refer the people to the La Leche?
The La Leche, they're really nice ladies. And they know how to nurse their babies. None of them have any significant medical training at all. So if you do run across a baby that has a significant issue, they don't know what to do with that. Honestly, it's a great place for, you know, hey, you're doing great, let's keep doing it. But beyond that, they refer them back to their physicians. And most physicians, that's not an area that they're interested in or terribly skilled at if they have issues. So sometimes these ladies are kind of left with, oh my gosh, what do you know? Doctor says, do formula bleach and it will help me. That's where we can step in and give her some support.
Okay.
If I'm reading this, the hospital staff are not real, they don't push the breastfeeding, they'd rather.
They talk about it like it's a nice thing. And if mom is interested in doing it and you have the right staff mix on, you might get somebody in the room to help you. But they don't all, they're not all great supporters. And there are, you know, we get feedback that if there wasn't anybody on that to help them and they had trouble. And I've heard nurses say, well, you know, I don't do breastfeeding. Well, there's lots of things we don't do, but we still think about it. So.
But everything I've read here says this is the best option.
Yeah.
Isn't that what doctors and hospitals are supposed
to be? Should be doing? Absolutely. And there have been, I didn't mention this, but there's been a lot of buzz in the last several years. Probably about 8 years ago, Joint Commission came forward with a position statement about breastfeeding. Joint Commission really encouraged the hospitals to start reporting on measures for breastfeeding. Joint Commission is basically the most hospital that their hospital is in. And breakfast with sick people in it. And so hospitals became a bit more interested at that point. They began to hire more lactation consultants. But for example, one of the hospitals here has 3 on staff. They're not necessarily staffed at night, they're not necessarily staffed on the weekend. In addition to all their lactation duties, they also see all the babies 2 to 3 days after discharge. So they've got this clinic they're running, they're trying to support all the moms out on the floor, and that's all support they get.
Well, it's been a long time since I've been down to baby. But doesn't the doctor, you know, before the birth, isn't this all Don't they ask?
These are primary Medicaid, he said.
And even the private pay docs, you know, they'll ask if you're going to rest or bottle feed, and whatever you say, okay, they write it down, that's that, and you're shaking your head, you're probably very sad. So until some of that culture changes, we're going to be fighting an uphill battle. There have been lots of initiatives. Drink Commission was started. There is something, and I'm really fuzzy exactly what is happening, but at the state level, they partnered with a group called Cofactive that tries to partner with and the hospital to try to keep collaboration going. Because of my connection to the hospital, I've been able to at least have a dialogue with some of the lactation consultants, but it's hard to make things happen in physicians if all of them talk to us lactation consultants.
I would say one thing is you might consider a name change because it seems kind of confusing, you know, that.
The baby cafe?
Yeah.
Unfortunately, that's a, if we decided not to use their model, we could change it. Absolutely. If we use their model, we have to use their names. We could put it really little and then something bigger. Baby cafe in very little letters. So we would still be just,
cafe makes it sound like, okay, you have several entrees. Well,
yeah,
you're only pushing one.
Right, exactly, yeah. Maybe we should get something out of it.
Do we pay this Baby Cafe International some fee for using their program?
$150 a year.
Well, that's peanuts, yeah.
It's not huge.
Not like $5,000.
And I think once we, as we continue to go, it would be difficult to leave the logo behind and register to something else. Once you're stable, you can do that.
Mm-hmm.
People still know who you are.
Was that in Kenosha this year, or I read it someplace where they arrested a woman for breastfeeding on a park bench?
Oh, really?
Or somebody, complained, I don't understand.
It periodically happens, and in Wisconsin there are state statutes to protect women against that. Unfortunately, it still does sometimes happen. There was a complaint a couple of years ago about one of the public buildings, and I don't know all the details, but somebody was reprimanded. Scoot your mom out, and so it still does happen. And actually, just being a baby. What do you mean, baby?
I just sent you an email.
Oh, you sent an email? Yeah. Okay.
Apples and what?
Okay, awesome. Yeah, I've got this can up here was actually, there's an actual sample that goes with it that we have all over the place. So I could have some vendor of him.
You're seeing a lot of people like it. I mean, is it becoming more and more people coming down?
We're getting, like I said, we're getting 4 to 6 months a week. We get more phone calls than that. And the ones that show up there tend to be the ones that are on Medicaid. The ones that call me tend to be the ones that have private insurance. I don't know why that is. I don't know if it's the location that they want to go to. But I'll talk to anybody about breastfeeding.
Who's directing them to you?
Well, my connections at the hospital, plus our home visitation. We've got a team of three, I think there's 9 nurses total. And so they hand out brochures.
Do they hand them out to the mothers when they show up at the hospital?
They're part of the packet at St. Catherine's. Yeah. So, and again, you recently had a baby.
2 years ago.
Okay. Some of you might remember getting this huge, ream of paper that you go home with. Do you look at it right away, or does it sit on the, covered until 6 months from then? So it's hard to tell how many moms actually see it when it's after. Our home visitation clients are made well aware of it. I do try to connect each one of them prior to birth, because they're more likely to call me if they've seen that face for the next week before. It's a little scary when you're having trouble or a question and call somebody you don't know. So that those ones we try to connect with, but the ones just out in the community, they find me either through the hospital or through WIC. Some of them have called me through physicians' offices.
Any more questions? Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Hey, Laverne, mental health update.
Hey.
What's the state doing to us now?
Well, the state and the feds
that we're concerned about, but let me just say on the footnote that both sides of the aisle on the federal level, Congress agreed on a package of mental health authorization, service authorization, but the details are still coming out. And I think out of that bill, there were a lot of provisions related to hospitalization and crisis, maybe would see. Now, this is not what they passed, was not an appropriations bill, so sometimes the money doesn't necessarily follow the authorization. But there are a number of provisions in that bill that we're still trying to sort out that maybe, if it trickles down to a local level, maybe would provide more crisis money for adult crisis or juvenile crisis as well. But we will have, I gave you a save the date, we will have an expert coming to Kenosha, the NAMI National, as a director of federal legislative advocacy, Andrew Spurley, who will be talking at UW Parkside on January 27th. And so for that bill, he'll be able to provide much more detail and be able to tell us how that might impact the state and communities. And I know he has followed that, and he has asked us to thank our local congressional representatives for that bill. But what I wanted to focus on tonight, and talk to John a little bit about it, I thought we'd be a little bit remiss if we didn't alert members of the committee of some of the risks of the kinds of reforms that are being discussed on a federal level, and also how that might impact state action. So what I'd like to do, and I apologize for not getting this paper out to you sooner, but I would like to kind of walk you through it and talk about what the we see as some possible risks to consumers with mental illness or behavioral health issues, and risks to the Kenosha County in terms of expenditures and what the costs could be to counties. So just to, as background, that the Medicaid program, Medicaid is a health insurance program for low-income children and adults. It's the largest and is the largest payer for long-term care services, both in the nursing home and in at-home programs like family care. If you look at, I took an opportunity waiting for my daughter in one of her sports activities to read A Better Way, which is the GOP position or paper put out last June about reforms to health care, and covers everything from the Affordable Care Act, repeal of the Affordable Care Act, Medicaid to Medicare, and a lot of recommendations in there which are sweeping in nature. If you read the A Better Way, and if you look at the appointments and some of the campaign rhetoric as well as campaign claims, promises, and if you look at some of the appointments that are recommended, you kind of see that there's a pattern appearing that there will be some sweeping changes proposed to Medicaid. Some of that is that has been the appointees from or proposed appointees from Indiana who have had a background in some Medicaid reform. Let me walk you through that. So there's a couple of ways that on a federal level that changes can be made. It can be congressional action, and certainly Congress is energized to not only to repeal the Affordable Care Act, but to make major changes in Medicaid. From what I saw just in emails today, that it appears as if the focus will be more on Medicaid than on Medicare. certainly seniors and others have been worried about what the future of Medicare is going to be. But it appears as if from statements that are made by the president-elect and by Congress, that Medicaid will be the focus. So we could be looking at congressional action that would be changed, that could change Medicaid, and we could, there's another way, other ways that they can make changes by the appointees to federal offices. There it could be interpretation of existing regulations, it could be changes to regulations, and it could be the authority to through the authority to grant or not grant waivers to states. States have asked for in the past asked for waivers to certain Medicaid regulations, and they've received it or not received it in some cases. And that's one vehicle for executing changes on a state level. Some changes in my mind have been in, or waivers have been positive, like the family care program, which allows long-term care services in the home as an alternative to nursing home care. That's been done through a waiver, a pretty long-standing waiver. Other waivers that the state has requested have not been approved. The request, for instance, to have a 48-month limitation on Medicaid for child adults. So on the federal level, the current Medicaid system provides federal matching dollars to state and county expenses. So for some services, like our community support program, which is an intensive case management program for persons with mental illness. In that program, we provide the local match, but we can draw down federal matching dollars, roughly 50-50 for Wisconsin. It varies by the percentages vary by state, but for Wisconsin, it's kind of close to 50-50. So we purchase the services, we pay for services, and we can draw down Medicaid dollars. Other programs like the Comprehensive Community Services, a few years ago, the state allowed counties, if they formed regions with other counties, they said that they would provide that match. So for Comprehensive Community Services, which is a little less intensive, where we move people sometimes from CSP to CCS as they're on kind of on a road to recovery and begin and more able to manage their home care. So in that case, the state provides the match for that, and it is able to, for the number of people who are enrolled in services, it's able to draw down that federal money as long as somebody, either the state or the county, pays the local match. Now, what's proposed both in the paper and has been proposed in other bills by Congress in the past and now will likely get more attention and have a smoother path. What's proposed is either a per capita grant to states or a block grant. And so that there would be a fixed amount of money available to states. And states would have to decide within that kind of where their priorities are. It's certainly apparent in the paper that the intent of this is to save Medicaid dollars. And so the concern by advocates is that if the amount is limited, and if we end up having more people, if a recession, times are bad, people have low incomes, they're eligible for Medicaid, where do they go for services, and who's going to pay for the services?
How did they calculate it? You know?
That I can't answer yet.
Because in theory,
it could be better. I mean, it depends on obviously how much it is. I mean, the theory of it is, you got this amount of money, and the federal government touches it, it means there's going to be cost involved. They just took it and gave it to the states. What they say, isn't that the point of that, is saying you're basically going to get the same money, if not more, because we're not touching, you're going to administer it. Your concern is it's not going to be enough because of the built-in inflation and stuff like that.
Yeah,
but I mean, I'm just saying, right. Okay, so it gets down to what the number is, really. You could argue it's both sides, I guess, yeah.
Potentially, yeah.
Yeah, I know that.
There is, in the things that I can't, I really don't understand enough to be able to explain, there is a suggested formula in this paper on how that could be done. I think this paper talked about using 2016 as a base year and then having factoring in some kind of, I'm not sure if it was a yearly increase, but the problem is that if your numbers, your number of people eligible goes up, well, that it didn't sound like it was a provision for expanding the base or recognizing inflation or healthcare costs, which certainly we're all concerned. So it, yeah. Our concern is if dollars then are limited to the state, then they would, and then it would trickle down to counties to potentially cover those expenses. And I just asked my staff today just to look at, and I don't, this is not a fiscal analysis by any means, and I think probably at some point we should be trying to do that to look at all the ramifications potential ramifications of Medicaid reform. But two things have happened over the last year. What you've heard a lot about is our increased expenses because of the all of our placements to the institutes. And that was due primarily, largely too, because of the St. Luke's reducing its debt. The difference, again, just as a reminder, with St. Luke's, we were able to, because they were considered a general hospital with a psychiatric unit, Medicaid could cover those costs. In a what's considered an institute for mental disease, like any of the specific psychiatric hospitals or the state institute, Medicaid will not cover the costs for people aged 22 to 64. So that's where we lost a great deal of money. If that had not been the case, we would have done, two things would have happened, as because of the Medicaid expanded in Wisconsin to childless adults, effective in April of 2014. And with that, we worked real hard to screen and enroll people who were low income and eligible for that. As a result of that, two things happened. One is that their prescription costs were covered then by Medicaid. And that difference, just as an example, in 2012, we paid $409,000 for prescription costs. And the reason we did it, we didn't provide everything. We provided the important prescriptions so that people their conditions would not exacerbate and they would not end up in the hospital. In 2012, $409,000. In 2016, we're projecting $6,300. That's a big difference. Now, both that we experienced that with both with therapy and pharmacy and some hospital costs, where in some cases now, since a few people who did get into St. Luke's, that they were covered under Medicaid. But, and then the other thing was in terms of revenue that we generated from Medicaid. We have, with our programs, many of our programs, we received Medicaid for the costs of service to the people who are eligible and enrolled in Medicaid. And that And the difference because of that, if you take like adult crisis, in 2013, we generated $267,000 in Medicaid revenue for adult crisis. In 2016, that's projected to be $484,000. The other, in the ADRC, it's not just the health services, in the ADRC, over $500,000 of our revenues from Medicaid. So the expanding the program to childless adults not only help us cover some of the costs for the of care for those individuals, but also provided some revenue for the services that we were also providing. So our concern is if that some Medicaid proposals could affect that. Now, one of the things that it was proposed in the state budget, and this is kind of where the state comes in. So the state, if the state has a clearer path to get a waiver, we're pretty sure that they're going to re-propose again some of the things that they did a couple of years ago that were not able to get a waiver approval. They're more likely to be able to get waiver approvals now. So one of the things they proposed was, for instance, a 48-month limitation on Medicaid for childless adults. And that was a big concern of ours because the persons with mental illness are not likely to get the kind of employment that would allow them access to health care coverage. So that's a concern. There's also talk about premiums and co-pays and they were talking about drug testing and some other things for people to have access to it. So those restrictions could affect access to care for the persons with mental illness in our community, not just with mental illness, others as well, but this is what I'm focusing on. It could also affect the revenue that we get.
Correct me if I'm wrong, I seem to recall reading that some of the drug testing for the recipients of food stamps or whatever, in places where they've done that, the costs of the drug testings have far exceeded any savings by taking people off the program?
I've read that as well, and that would certainly be our concern.
So that would be a waste of money then.
Well, and who would be liable for the drug testing? Is that some an expense that would then have to fall on counties?
Yeah.
So those are the concerns that I just wanted you to be aware of. Certainly, as there will be a lot of proposals, I'm sure on the federal level from Congress, there will be, and as we see when the governor's budget is released in February, we think that will probably be some provisions related to Medicaid. It is certainly a big state expenditure as well. But I think it's important for everybody to know and be able to communicate your concerns to the folks that represent us and to think about how this could affect services and county expenditures.
David? Thank you. I know I came in a bit late. I lost my phone. I got to come. You were talking about block grants, I know, as I came in. The National Association of Counties has a number of health steering committees. All of them have been very much against block grants for many, 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 many years. And this is kind of just information for the committee. But I'm kind of curious to see how some of those folks react to congressional proposals when they convene in about a month and a half to 2 months. Their reaction to some of this and that dialogue could spur a lot of positive change in terms of outcomes for Kenosha County. You never know. Sometimes Congress likes to listen to them very directly. Sometimes it's just the staff. Sometimes it's just a particular administrative office. And sometimes it's nobody. So, here.
You can end the poll.
Thank you. So what would you suggest on this 48-month limit on eligibility? I'd like to know, you know, what the department feels that would be a good number.
Yeah, I can't speak for the department as a whole, but I guess to me it's true. I would not put a period of time, a limitation in that kind of limitation on eligibility. I would be working toward trying to, for those persons who are able to work, to be able to get them in to work with the job center and other places to get to a point where they could access jobs, access private health insurance. But that's a long process. How many of those people will actually be able to do it? I don't know.
Well, 4 years is a long time, and I'm just wondering, you know, if you maybe had some statistics or something, say, you know, what time period would show better results or anything like that. It seems like, you know, why should taxpayers be on the hook forever?
Well, the question is, do we provide health care coverage for individuals, I guess? You know, so, I mean, we don't have any limitations to our health in a period of time, limitations to our own health insurance. We hopefully try to get move people beyond Medicaid. If we can access jobs, if we can access health care coverage in some other way, then that would be the avenue for limiting taxpayer exposure.
How many people?
Thank
you. How many people do you think this affects?
Well, we have we had 21% of our population, of our total population, that includes children with who are on.
I was thinking, I saw that number, but I'm thinking more of the parent of, you know, the single.
That was childless adults, yes. 4,700. About 4,700.
These people that they have mental health issues, right?
Well, now I should say the childless adults, that would not be just persons with mental illness. That would be anybody who is low income, who's single and low income, and who doesn't meet the criteria for the who's not in the elderly, blind, or disabled category, but. Because of income is eligible for Medicaid. And that means that they're below the poverty threshold. With the Affordable Care Act, if you're above the poverty threshold, you would be expected to seek private insurance through the Affordable Care Act through Obamacare. And then if you're beneath that threshold, then it would be Medicaid.
Today's paper had this rezoning for the 100,000 square foot medical facility or medical complex at Cross Point. It said it was ambulatory, or it was going to be ambulatory. So do we have any plans? Has anybody looked at what they're going to provide? I mean, are they an outlet for mental health beds?
I doubt it. I have not been privy to any discussion about that that facility, but we have not been successful in providing that.
It's going to be like an inventory. It's just instead of you just go there and not have to pay emergency room costs for your care. It's like. without the cost, supposedly.
So more like a clinic?
Yeah.
Neither hospital was interested in mental health beds.
Well, Aurora has its own psychiatric facility in outside of Milwaukee and their own psychiatric hospital, so they do have a psychiatric hospital. Today, I don't believe they, when we met with them as part of the study back in the fall of 2015, they really didn't, they were more concerned about, they had some plans already in place to expand beds at their psychiatric hospital. And they were working on recruiting psychiatrists.
So this Aurora facility in Milwaukee, what's the difference in miles between there and and the state hospital we were taking people to?
I'm not sure. We do try to get them there, and it depends on whether they will accept them or not. Sometimes it's the it could be due to behaviors. It could be due to coverage, insurance coverage. Will depend maybe on and whether they have beds available. But we have placed people there and other facilities.
Go ahead, Jim.
What is the difference in the cost between the establishment and the community center and the further one?
I didn't get those figures.
Also, you gave a number of like 4,100, did you say? Some people have you calculated out how this would be, someone asked the question, how many would be affected by this?
On our people that receive Medicaid in Kenosha County, about that number are childless adults.
Okay, that's the number, that's what I was going to ask you. What is the total number as a compared to the childless adults? So you answered the question, okay. Thank you.
Now that group is not all, I mean, it includes low income people, not necessarily just persons with mental health.
You're talking Medicaid.
Medicaid.
Okay, and basically, they're a population that doesn't really have a voice. If you start talking about Medicare,
there's a voice.
Yeah. That's a pretty loud one.
Yes.
Yeah. See what they're doing.
So, I think it has, because it hasn't received the attention, and I think it's one of these things that can kind of move quickly. I think my own guess is that it will move quickly both on a federal level and a state level. And so that if there's any way that we want to speak out on that or have any influence, I think we need to do so quickly.
And okay, if they would drop all the Medicaid funding tomorrow, as a county, we would be responsible for these people on our own, right?
We would be responsible. What we would have to do is sort through the services that would require. We would have to, certainly we'd have to cover hospital costs. And we, for instance, with pharmacy costs that we were paying before, we wouldn't necessarily have to do that. But however, we would be shooting ourselves in the foot if we didn't make sure that people had their medications to avoid hospitalization. So we would have to sort through very carefully what we can and can't do. Yes, there would be additional costs to the county, what those would be. And we don't know what the specific proposals will be. We don't know, even with the block, proposed block grants or capitated payments, what the state then would do with that, what priorities will the state set within those, within what parameters are set by the feds.
More questions for Laura? Go ahead, Jeff.
Oh, I'm sorry if I didn't end your meeting.
That'd be my guess.
I was curious, I know David comes up with all these things that are going on at the state level through NACO and through Wisconsin counties and such, which I commend you for, certainly. Do we have an idea of you're bringing this down. Do we have any other idea of any other programs that might have a negative impact on us down the road? I mean, because I think this committee and the legislative committee should get out in front of anything that's going to be coming up that's, you know, not necessarily going to hurt people, but I'd like to know as a representative how it's going to impact our county. I mean, we set budgets and we represent people and we want to help as many people as we can. And sometimes we're caught unawares with some of the things that are coming down the pipeline. I just wonder what, you know, whether we have the ability to know, and I don't know this, that's why I'm asking, what some of those might be and some things that maybe we can get out ahead of.
I can answer that question to a degree. NACO has been sending out emails to its attendees that are both coming to the conference and the ones that sit on various steering committees. No one really knows anything. I think there's a sense that there's a lot of different competing agendas between who's in the cabinet, who's the VP, who's the president, and what Congress may or may not do. Whether or not people talk and listen to each other, I don't think anybody has a clue. There's so many aspects about this that are not normal day-to-day governance in terms of how it's developed. There's really no way.
And I understand that, but at some point,
yeah,
we are going to know when budgets are, if we have to wait till the budget is released. I that's fine. I don't know the answer to this. That's why I'm bringing it up. I just think that, you know, there's so many things that go on around us and these impact us. People who, you know, I've been doing this for 8 years and having these conversations with you, and my worst nightmare was in my first term when we had to pay $750,000 for two placements. I mean, I sat in the chair that you're sitting in, and I couldn't even fathom that. You can't plan for that. And I think with all these mental health issues and other things coming down the pipe, I understand there's uncertainty all around, but at some point, we are going to know some things, and we have to be in front of that.
And just to sort of answer maybe a little further, you know, the Wisconsin Counties Association legislative meeting, which I want to say was like February 4th and 5th or something like that, you know, that's when every single, you know, state agency under the governor's authority basically says, here's what we're thinking of building. And then what the legislature does, you just have to constantly be engaged through WCA. With NACO, it's essentially the same thing. You know, you meet for a week, there's all these different steering committees, those steering committees have subcommittees, and they're literally meeting with agency staff and the divisions inside of those agencies around specific issues to hear what those agencies intend to do and what those plans are. Whether or not those individual congressional oversight committees that have jurisdiction reach out to the National Association of County Steering Committees, some do, some don't. Transportation Steering Committee got lucky last year. That congressional committee decided to reach out very directly and have NACO write significant portions of the transportation legislation. I can't say that that will happen this time for any other area of the federal government, but that at least you get some sense better. One of the reasons why I like going is because then I can see the face of the person in the administration, get a phone number and an email, and as things progress, continue to be in conversation so that we have a more accurate picture of what they end up with. I think that's always the smartest way to work.
We have a health, as part of the Healthy People 2020 initiative through the health department, we have a mental health subcommittee of that. And when the group met, and there were a number of things as a result of our study that we wanted to move forward advocacy the initiatives and program improvements and that. But we, after thinking about the Medicaid and the potential ramifications, we felt that we would scrap everything else for now and focus on Medicaid because that has the potential to have the most profound impact on access to services and costs to the county. The group discussed whether or not we wait until we see what federal proposals are coming up and then wait until the governor's budget is out and then we hear from the Joint Finance Committee, or do we do something now? We decided to move forward with trying to put this paper together, even though we don't have all the answers, because we thought it would be But then the taking the next step to let our, both our congressional representatives and our state representatives at least know of our concerns, even if we can't respond to a specific proposal, to let them know that we are concerned about the potential impact of Medicaid reform on our services.
I agree. The first time we should get that passed out, and we should all sign up to that, bring up our concerns with it at least, you know, to keep us in the lead. You know, after everybody studied it out.
I think a large portion of this is, I'm guessing, is the goal is to, if there's going to be changes, to get more people on. That's the ability. I don't know, Medicaid grown, I mean, it's grown in numbers, right?
Yeah.
How's that a good thing? It shouldn't be necessarily that way.
It reflects our economy too. We don't, I mean, there are people who are working, working poor who are still eligible because of low income.
But if they're working, they may have a health plan because they're part time.
Yeah.
I understand that. That's, but I think I get that too. I mean, it's not, there are going to be people on Medicaid, it's what it's designed for, but I think that the, where it differs in Medicare is there's been a contribution to Medicare. So some people would be there, and as they retire, they pay for it. And Medicaid is not. And it's difficult. I mean, it's, you know, think about the private sector. How difficult about that? It's not going to be simple. It's plastic.
But in the long run, isn't it cheaper to treat them than to ignore them?
Well, you don't ignore them, you put them in jail.
Yeah.
$70 a day.
Yeah.
The other thing, too, is that I don't know if as a percentage, and that might be something we want to find out, as a percentage of state costs in terms of the, I don't know that which group is necessarily the most costly, because we have included in Medicaid are the people receiving in care in nursing homes. And at some point, no matter how much you see, if you're in the nursing home for a period of time, or if you're in the family, at some point you're going to be covering it through Medicaid. And those numbers are growing. The number of people with dementia is growing. And so that's going to affect Medicaid expenditures. But it does affect it now, certainly, in the long future.
Andy? Do you know when somebody comes off of Medicaid?
The workforce development.
So is there any way to, just to have a hypothetical statistic out there, or to track it, kind of track it, is there any way to know when somebody comes off of Medicaid and whether they've previously been incarcerated or when they do get incarcerated? Is there any way for you and the Sheriff's Department to talk?
Yes. They are off of, they go off of Medicaid if they've been incarcerated, if they're in jail. They automatically go off.
I guess it wouldn't matter right now because there's no time frame, right? As to when you come off of Medicaid and you're proposing a time frame.
Right.
So let's say hypothetically, if that gets approved, could we start looking at that when they come off of Medicaid if they end up getting incarcerated? I guess I'll speculate now. We can talk about it later.
I can check with that department and see with that division and see if that's possible to track. I don't, we have worked with the jail to help people who are eligible to get on Medicaid after they're discharged from the jail, so that they can access care, access psychiatry, medications.
Any more questions for Warner? Thank you very much. Always entertaining.
DOC and the state can't do it.
More questions than answers. Yeah.
Any other business authorized by law? Do we have any? None that I know of. Committee members' comments. First off, are we interested in a field trip to places?
Yes.
Do it in like maybe March?
April.
You won't be here.
Oh. I'll be here in April.
Oh, okay. We'll do it in April. I got to give the guy a fire.
Crisis what?
It takes care of, Laverne, you're better at this than me.
Well, right now, I mean, the crisis services are just out of the Social Human Development Services, and they, I mean, it's just people sitting, it's somebody sitting by a phone answering, they're answering phones.
Care Center.
Well, the Care Center.
That's what I was thinking, Care Center. I was thinking, what's crisis? I hadn't heard of that one.
So you're talking about seeing the current facility, or the...
The current facility, well, the new one won't be open till next year, right?
Right, so, yeah.
And the current one is just down here. Yeah, I mean...
Is that where the sprinklers went off? And they relocated people?
Pardon me?
Sprinklers went off and they had to relocate them?
We have a name problem. There's a, what used to be considered called Transcorp, is a CVRF, community-based residential facility that has persons, some persons with mental illness, some persons with developmental disabilities, and they changed ownership, and they named it the Care Centers with a C-A-R-E. We were upset when we heard it. We asked them if they could change, and they thought you couldn't do that. And it's been problematic because our Care Center, K-A-R-E Center, has been, there's been a mix-up with police, the transportation and everything, and it's been problematic. But no, it wasn't the...
Okay.
It wasn't our...
We have nothing, that's not a county...
Well, we do have some people placed at...
So we don't run it like, run anything with administration in it?
No.
The private facility?
The only thing for a meeting, I don't know how, certainly we can talk to the staff, but I don't know. They have like a dining area that maybe you could sit down and maybe take a tour of the building. I don't know.
Well, like you say, the only thing, we all enjoyed our field trip down to, I forgot where it was, but it was fun. I mean, it'd be nice to see some, and, I mean, going down to the job center where we meet so late, and we go down there to be vacant. It's just like, you know, I don't know how the members feel about seeing some of the facilities that we are providing funds for.
We open up the Aging and Disability Resource Center for you.
I qualify.
You could see our small cubes.
I know, we can do that in March, go see ADRC. Any other thing for February?
Yeah, I'd like to bring something up, propose for the one of the upcoming agendas. With a discussion we had with the mayor, and it has to do with sex offender placements. City of Kenosha has become pretty much saturated, and they don't have anywhere to put sex offenders and comply with the restrictions. According to the mayor, the problem started in Pleasant Prairie. They put a lot of restrictions on where they could place them. He said the other villages followed suit. And the city finally has gotten to the point where they are saturated, and a couple of months ago they had a sex offender that needed to be placed, and they had no place to put that person. So what they did was they gave that person the address of the first step over there by the Kenosha Hospital, and gave him a tent and a sleeping bag. And he finds a place to sleep at night. And now the mayor says there's some more sex offenders being released with no place to go. I don't know what the answer is, but I don't think tents and sleeping bags are an acceptable answer, and it's something that we should talk about.
You know, I agree with you, Rick. It's a human service problem. It's a problem in the community. I understand why Summers and
nobody wants them, but
when the dumping ground becomes a city, which has a whole lot more problem trying to take care of them than, you know, so I don't know how we deal with that. We can talk to John.
Something should be discussed.
We don't. That was one of the first issues that I dealt with being on the county board. That is a state issue. They really have to fix that. And they haven't touched it since they've done it. There isn't anything that we can do under our jurisdiction to really deal with that. I mean, aside from maybe addressing it as a potential homelessness factor some way, some kind of, to be innovative. But beyond that, there isn't anything that we really can
do. Well, what we're doing is not acceptable.
I'm not disagreeing with you on that.
Well, first step will be going away in April. The mayor will want to call first step.
Well, I wonder, like,
what is first step?
First step is, you guys out in the county use this when you got a drunk or a homeless person, you bring them in and drop them off at first step. It's kind of a place of last resort. There is no real rule. They can't lay down to sleep, they have to sit, but they don't have to be straight.
It's essentially a day shelter, but the rule is they cannot sleep.
Yeah, they can come and go as they
sit at the table and stay warm.
Yeah, and it's
right up by Kenosha Hospital.
It's a mess. And the mayor is going to close it. Now, I don't know what's going to happen with them people because nobody wants it in their neighborhood. And these people, the people they're dealing with don't want help. I mean, this guy's a drunk. He's going to come in. He's cold. He's going to sit inside till he's warm. He's going to go back out.
And they don't qualify for ends.
Yeah, they don't.
So, question I have then is, what does the sheriff's department, or what does the KCDC, before an inmate is released back in their community, what do they do to say, where are you living when you get out? That's what the DOC does right now.
They gave them the address of the inns of the first step.
Well, I'd like to know, is that actually the case?
That was the case. They gave them that address.
From KCDC.
Well, I was told they were given the address of first step and given 1 mile radius, a tent, and a sleeping bag.
KCDC gave that. But that's what I'm
saying. I'm not sure who did it.
Well, we got to pin down the point.
Yeah, and it needs to be discussed. That's why I'm asking to put it on the agenda.
From all over.
Right.
It isn't necessarily just the KCDC.
But you said we have nothing to do with it. Absolutely. We could have some small impact on it. And that small impact is those that are being released from KCDC, 30 days before they're being released, you then start looking at their release plan. What is their release plan? Where are they staying at when they get out? Not, hey, it's your last day out, here's a sleeping bag and a tent, go to first steps. That's not the right answer. But at the same time, do we need to employ somebody to do this?
I think they're doing that.
The bulk of the population is not KCDC folk, that's what I'm saying.
Sure. I think they do that, but I think you got a person that's getting out of jail, he's got no place to go. You can't keep him in jail. So they tell them to go to first step.
One now, and there's two more coming up soon. Same thing.
From where?
Tent and sleeping bag from I don't know where.
But from, right.
That's what's going
to
happen.
That's where we need to fix the problem.
Yeah, that's why we need to discuss it.
That's where we need to find the problem. Where are they coming from? Are they coming from a jail?
Could we ask Mr. Jansen to talk about it at our next meeting?
If everybody doesn't know, a jail and a prison are completely two different things.
Yeah.
So once we find out, are they coming from a jail or are they coming from a prison, we can start to look at the problem then and say, okay, well, you need to fix this. Or it's coming from the DLC. Well, the DLC has plans, and why are they not following those plans?
You're in the prison. I mean, you work for them. You say they have plans when they get out of prison.
Yeah, they
in the jail, the way I understand it, they have counseling now, and they have somebody here to kind of give them direction, right?
Well, from jail, yeah. We periodically get requests from corrections to find placement for individuals, and we send them a list of places that exist. But we don't really, I guess, we see that really as their role to find the placement, and that has traditionally been their role to find the placement. Changes. I mean, we don't have the staff to be able to follow up on all the individuals that are coming out of jail.
Maybe if it's all right with the committee, I'll talk to the sheriff and I'll talk to John and
Why don't we reach out to the manager over at the probation and parole office, the one over here and the one over by the DMV, and have them come in and tell us what their process is.
Put it on the agenda.
I will.
For February.
I will chase John down.
Can I?
Sure.
Because this is spanning two areas, and human services is a piece of it, but not exclusively. Mr. Chairman, if you find through your inquiry that the sheriff, you know, releases folks without a plan for them to be someplace, I think it might be wise that you have a joint committee meeting between judiciary and law and human services specifically on this issue, and then bring in, like, you know, both of you had said, so that you can have all of those folks in the room and deal with it that way. And I'm saying that because I got some stuff we should cover that first week in February before we hit Wisconsin Counties Association and NACO, and that doesn't necessarily need to be a part of it.
Okay, so you want basically to keep the agenda clean in February?
Well, I was waiting until they were done. I mean, it should be, but I don't think that's necessarily the meeting to do it. Only because I think the week immediately following that is WCA, and at the end of the month is NACO. And I would rather hear from the folks, you know, under our oversight as far as what their concerns are about what might come from Congress and the federal government, because I know this can't be the only thing. I'm sure there's stuff in workforce development. I'm sure there's stuff in health. I'm sure there's stuff in DCFS. There's probably things all over. But I want to know what those are with Boyd and the legislative committee before, you know, that would be good.
There is a need for expediency. I'm told there are, I believe, two more going to be released this month, next month, or very soon, with a sleeping bag in a tent. So this is something that, you know, I don't want to wait until we have a little encampment in the park.
So
how about
the week after? It doesn't.
It's cold. It's winter. It's wrong.
You want to do it tonight? We do it tonight. I mean, it doesn't have to be on, you know, the meeting.
Yeah.
You can schedule it from whenever.
Yeah.
I'm not saying no. It's great. I support it.
Let's go get a joint meeting, whatever. But yeah. Something needs to be talked about. Hopefully, we can figure out an answer.
And the thing is, this issue is not going to go away. It's going to
get worse.
It's going to expand bigger, right, Laverne? I mean,
yeah. I think the folks that you're talking about are coming from the prisons, not from the jail.
From the prison.
And probably a number of them are sex offenders, which are the most difficult people to place. Those
right,
are the
sex
ones
offenders.
That they sometimes
right.
Ask us for, you know, and we don't have. So you could focus just on that population instead of and have maybe corrections.
The township changes. We didn't take it long.
Okay. In Florida, people have been living under bridges for years because there's no place for them to be.
The townships around
it's
here,
warmer
Summers
down there.
Summers is one,
almost impossible.
Very restrictive.
Very restrictive, you know. You can't live within, a sex offender can't live within 9 miles of the school.
And look what happened in Wheatland recently.
What the problem is, they don't in the city, and the city has got the same issue you decided that. I mean,
how many people you got in your district? Sex offenders.
I've got over 30 in my district.
Over 30. In your district, yeah. So.
That motion to adjourn?
We'll move to adjourn.
For a second.
Did anything I say get heard? I want to know what our human services folks are concerned about coming down the federal pipeline, and I'd like to know it before I leave this county and have to go to Dane and then have to go to D.C.
When are you going to Dane?
Well, that'd be early February, which is why I said the joint meeting between judiciary and law, if that's necessary, that can happen at any time. It doesn't happen.
Where are you going?
Wisconsin Counties Association is, I want to say, second week of February. I can check my calendar. And then NACO is, it starts at the end of that month into March.
You want another meeting before you go?
No. I want the human services meeting that you regularly have at the beginning of the month to specifically cover whatever legislative issues, grievances, gripes, concerns our human services administrators have. That way, when Boyd and I walk over to wherever it is we go, we know what to say. We know dialogue-wise, we know what to bring back that's useful.
John will be able, Vern, you guys will be able to help us on that.
Yeah. I'll talk to John.
Yeah. I'll give John a call. Is he around or is he off playing golf?
Because I'm going to send an email tonight to administration asking the same thing.
Okay, we have a motion to adjourn. We have a second. We have a vote. All right.
Yes.
All right. All right.
Anybody again? Good. Oh, I got to sign something?
Yeah, I almost got it.